live. And that's a word I edited into this recording just for the occasion. It's the Mike Novak Show. Many have tried to copy it. Few have succeeded, mainly because nobody can spell my last name. And we're talking about five letters, folks. Oh, well, let's sing. Here we go.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. And true currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
And thank you for being here today. Well, I am, so you might as well be too. You can catch the Mike Novak Show on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, SoundCloud, the GLN radio network, at MikeNovak.net, and on the Green Divas Global Digital Network at GDGDRadio.com. Check out the Mike Novak Show on Facebook and on Twitter. The handle is at Mike Now, or feel free to write to me anytime you like, Mike at MikeNovak.net. Once again, as I mentioned, that's spelled NOWAK.net. In Chicago, the name Ken Dunn and the word recycling are almost interchangeable. That's because Dunn has been on a mission to save the planet's resources by, well, reusing everything in sight. And he's been doing it for somewhere around 50 years, believe it or not. People who run into Ken Dunn know that his shirt and pants are likely to be stained at any given time because he has usually just loaded his truck with recyclables or unloaded compost from it. This is called walking the walk, folks, and nobody does it better. In fact, a recent article wondered why Ken Dunn hasn't been awarded a genius grant by the MacArthur Foundation. So do I! And I bring it up in my conversation with him today. Hey, all of you MacArthur genius grant folks who listen to my show regularly and haven't given me one yet, well, Ken really deserves it. So get on the horn. Take care of it. He started a not-for-profit organization called the Resource Center some 35 years ago, and it is having a fundraiser on November 20th at the Greenhouse Loft, 2545 West Diversey Avenue in Chicago. For more information, go to resourcecenterchicago.org. And even if you can't attend the event, consider sending some money their way. They practically pioneered urban farming with City Farm, which has operated in the Cabrini Green neighborhood for years, and they have the best recycling drop-off location in the city at North Park Village, and now they're trying to turn an old 125,000-square-foot building on the south side into the Creative Reuse Warehouse. Oh, and did I mention that Ken studied philosophy at the University of Chicago, which is why he was able to connect the terrorist attack in Paris to reuse of our natural resources. This ain't your ordinary recycling dude. And after that, I pose a question to Susan Harris, one of the founders of the delightfully subversive, seductive, and sometimes snarky blog, Garden Rant. And that question is, how thick does your skin need to be to have worked a decade cranking out controversial articles? It turns out that she's wearing SPF with a rating of 352, which is probably why I haven't written a column for them, even though they have left the door open to me. At any rate, Susan sat patiently in a car having a conversation with me about a recent post that she wrote for Garden Rant and the blowback she received, which led us into all kinds of dark alleys and cul-de-sacs, which I think you will find fun. As always, you can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, for more information, including photos, links, and even my own occasionally snarky commentary. This is the Mike Novak Show, and there's plenty more ahead right after this.
Captain's log, stardate 42326.1. The Enterprise is under attack by an apparently hostile life form. Mr. Worf, status report.
They appear to be perambulating vegetables. We are being stalked by stalks of asparagus. That is incorrect, Mr. Worf.
Mr. Data, be more specific.
Asparagus officinalis, or killer asparagus, was the subject of a very popular 21st century tome by the brilliant author Mike Novak.
Mike Novak. I'm familiar with his work.
Of course. Attack of the Killer Asparagus is required reading at Starfleet Academy.
Tell me more, Mr. Data.
He has been variously compared to Mark Twain, Dave Barry, and Gwynoch of Ningledore.
Captain, shields are failing.
Thank you, Mr. Worf. Mr. Data, options.
Captain, it seems to be available online at aroundtheblockpress.com.
Aroundtheblockpress.com. What do they have to say?
It appears that Mike Novak is a slapstick every gardener, taking all our self-delusions, mishaps, and confusions and playing them for big laughs.
That's not very helpful, Mr. Data.
No, it is, however, highly accurate.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. I've known my next guest for a number of years now, Ken Dunn, and he's with the Resource Center, sometimes known as Chicago's Zero Waste Man. He is a recycler, he's a reuser, he's a composter. He's a guy who has looked at all the stuff in the world, and he tries to figure out how to use it more than once. Would that be a fair assessment there, Ken Dunn?
Yes, it is. And I just, we're at the time we just heard another sad bit of news from France. Our world is falling apart if we don't start using our resources more wisely to improve the quality of life of all of us now alive. And so instead of rushing to fix each little problem, let's commit to all of us be a little better in using the resources that are available to us and make sure those resources extend to all populations, which means if all populations have hope, we can return to civility, but we're losing it now.
That's a really good way to start, Ken. I wasn't sure how to bring that up, and I have to tell you, as I'm recording this, those events happened yesterday in Paris, and I'm pretty unhappy about it. I watch the news, unfortunately, and I haven't even looked at it this morning because I'm not sure I'm up to it. But you take what you do here in Chicago, which is reusables, and because you're a philosopher and that's your background, you're a philosopher, you're already trying to figure out ways to bring that message to this world situation. And I would imagine that most people would look at what you do and say, that doesn't have anything to do with the tragedy going on in Paris. And yet you've managed to make that connection. Maybe you want to expound on that a little bit. The idea being that we have so much, well, actually, we only have so much resources on this planet, and if we don't use them all properly, there are people who don't have them, and then when they don't have them, that leads them to acts of violence.
Well said. And let me give you a bit of history. I was involved in the anti-nuclear group interested in ending nuclear proliferation in the 60s, and thought maybe we should work to have less wars overseas. And I came to a conclusion that instead of tackling the biggest problem in the global level, let's get our own house in order. Here in Chicago, we can be more interested in everybody having a high quality of life, and we can develop an economy that works here locally. And if we can have that model throughout the world, I think, as you say, tension will be less if the resources of the planet are shared more equitably.
Where to start here? I thought I was going to be talking to you about recycling and your fundraising event coming up for the Resource Center, and you take me, to the world economy and what's happening, and I can relate to that, because just this week I posted a couple of things about Starbucks. All right, and recycling their paper cups. And, you know, their paper cups are lined, so it makes it a little more difficult to recycle them. And they've been working to try to get that done. I saw a report out of Canada where they tracked, you know, some journalistic entity tracked some of these cups and found out they were going to landfills. And this is against what Starbucks had in mind. Of course, they did it for Hortons as well. And my
let me just interrupt.
Yeah.
That's a part of the issue we have to confront. I've been involved in conversations with Starbucks since the beginning, and those cups are readily recyclable in some cardboard mills. But we don't have a site-specific system for anything. We do everything for the global system. So our recycling, even when Starbucks chooses for it to go to a mill that can utilize that for making additional paper products, that there's no one location that can send to these few mills. And so if we went back to a more community-based system, those cups could all go to mills here in the United States that welcome that material. But it's just that our global and industrial system has grown much beyond the ability of us to give it the personal touch. And that means a lot to me. I was a very happy member of a sustainable organic agricultural community in Kansas until the industry or the farming was becoming more mechanized. We had to get bigger machinery, and we were purchasing machinery that couldn't turn around in the very local ecologies. Farmland is varied. There's bottomland, there's sandy hills, and all. And there are some crops that do best in each one. And we had been knowledgeable of these different little areas, some of them only 2 or 3 acres. That one was perfect for alfalfa. The other was perfect for something else. I realized I was the last person that really knew these local areas. We soon would be working with equipment that's too big to accommodate these little areas. So that's the symptom, and this was in the 50s. I made the decision I better study enough to figure out what we're going to do about losing this intimate touch with the productivity of our planet. So we've got to figure out systems that are flexible to see what we got here and how it can be best utilized, and it's not going to work through the global industries with preparing commodities for the global market.
I would ask, is that the basis then of your philosophy studies? Is that along the lines of social justice?
Yes, I came to the University of Chicago for graduate study and immediately noticed that posing this question in terms of social justice would be the best way to go to solve immediate problems. As you know, the University of Chicago is surrounded by impoverished communities that don't have a viable economy. And so I looked around, what would bring these surrounding communities up to equity with the Hyde Park community in terms of quality of life? And the bill, if you use conventional mechanisms like rebuilding, fix-up, clean-up, and all of that, is astronomical. And this was the 60s, and it was pretty clear there wasn't the will to spend massive amounts of money fixing up communities. And, by the way, it might not be a good idea to bring external resources to do the fix-up. Maybe it would be better to fully recognize local resources and build an economy with those local resources to build a quality of life in that community. So, of course, the resource center started with the notion that if we better utilize and value our resources, we'll be able to have some progress towards social justice, and progress that doesn't have to be continually funded by grants or donations, but can be part of the normal economy. So our programs involve recycling from those communities. So those are resources, valuable things that could be the basis for jobs in those communities. And right now we're focusing on urban agriculture as a way of providing the very things our distressed communities need. They need jobs, and they need quality fresh produce.
And that's why you started City Farm, and for many years, one of your locations has been at Clyburn and Division in Chicago, which was the heart of one of those projects.
Cabrini Green,
right. And I was trying to figure out the right words to describe it, but they were high rises where they crammed people in, and then after decades said, well, this isn't working because all it's creating is more poverty and despair. So they tore them down, but then the city had to figure out what to do with those people. And I'm not sure that they really have, although you've been part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. For one thing, you colonized that area, open land, and grew stuff in the neighborhood there. And now I understand you're working with the city in terms of mixed housing.
Yeah, we're moving the farm from this, the way to describe it is that at one point, I'm not sure which census, it was the most impoverished census tract in the nation. It now is being rebuilt as mixed housing. And our farm is moving to another empty vacant lot nearby, but we have a deal with the developer that the farm will be moved to the roof to be gardens for the residents. So, a lot of people would be discouraged if they have to move, but this is part of our plan to bring the appropriate level of productivity to each community, and it's no longer the totally impoverished community, it's a mixed income community, and for mixed income people to get together, it's wonderful that they can do it and relate to it and learning how to garden to produce fruits and vegetables for their own community.
You mentioned how you're moving City Farm, and you had told me years ago that the whole idea of it was that you could scoop it up in a day or a week or whatever it took and just move it someplace else, which you're going to do. And you say it's going to be on a roof. Does that mean it's not going to be on the ground at all in Cabrini Green anymore?
That's actually a separate farm that will be started, or community garden that will be started after the building is built. The present farm that they'll start building this new building in the first of next year will move half a block west to a much bigger lot. So we'll be able to provide our services much better because of this move. And that was the theory in utilizing our resources here in Chicago well. We needn't lock down vast tracts of our space for agriculture, but let's use the margins. There's this space that always occurs between decay and demolition before revitalization and rebuilding occurs, and we can provide jobs and healthy produce on that space and move it along.
As long as you're flexible and you're willing, to make it more or less a portable operation, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that seems to be the key.
The important thing is our growing utilizes 1,000 cubic yards of compost per acre. And with that, we're able to get 10 crops per year off of each bed, which gives us $160,000 of income in every acre. So that's five family-raising jobs per acre. And so the compost is the only way we're going to do that. There's no soil in the city that we'll grow food in because being an industrial city, there's the residue of lead, arsenic, and zinc everywhere, but compost, we can keep those things out and grow in that compost. I did a interview with Rick Bayless recently where we agreed that the problems of the world would be better solved if they were done in the context of food. In sharing a meal together or even sharing producing food together, people get to know each other and their skills, not their how they might differ from us. And once we know how to work with a different community and share a meal with them, we're more able to find our common ground and work towards solutions. So we are not resisting the relocation. In fact, that is our plan. Wherever we can bring an appropriate economy that serves a local community, we'll do that. And so that area won't be a farm anymore, but it'll be community gardens on the roof.
Okay, that's Ken Dunn, philosopher, recycler, founder of the Resource Center. We haven't even gotten to your fundraiser yet. I'm going to take a short break here, and we'll be back with Ken Dunn. If you want more information about the Resource Center, go to resourcecenterchicago.org, and we will have more with our conversation with Ken Dunn right after this. Gardeners are smart. Now, why do I say that? Well, gardeners know that if they live, say, in Chicago, in USDA hardiness zone 5B or 6A, they can grow plants that are suited to zones 5B or 6A. If they live in Denver, Colorado, where the zones are basically 5B and 6A, they're going to have some of the same success. That's why a publication like Chicagoland Gardening Magazine is useful in a lot of places in this country. It covers zones from about 4A to 6B, and that's a lot of area. It also has my column on the inside back page of every issue, and even that is transferable from state to state without a license. And speaking of state by state, that's the name of the outfit that publishes Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. They have 21 different publications in the Midwest and the South. Subscribe today by going to statebystategardening.com or call 888-265-3600. Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. I'm talking to Ken Dunn, who is the founder of the Resource Center in Chicago. As I mentioned before, that website is resourcecenterchicago.org. They've got a big fundraiser coming up. You know, in the first segment, we got to talking about Starbucks and City Farm and how you turn a philosophy major into a recycling outfit. Ken, thanks again for being with me. I wanna before we get to the fundraiser, and that's partly why we're talking here. I want to get back really quickly to the whole Starbucks thing. And you mentioned that cups are recyclable. Yeah, I get that. I mean, the folks who manufacture expanded polystyrene or styrofoam, as many people know it, will claim that it's 100% recyclable. The problem is, as of a couple of years ago, and I don't know how much that's changed, there were only 10 locations in the country where you could really do that. And to transport that stuff, it's not very energy efficient. So yeah, while you can recycle it, theoretically, practically, that stuff isn't there. And also, back with the Starbucks, you could change that whole paradigm if you wanted, simply by bringing your own cup, which is what I do to Starbucks. I'm appalled when I walk in and I see nobody with a reusable cup except me. And I've talked to baristas, and they will say, yeah, you know, out of 100, if we get 2, that's a good day. Isn't that discouraging?
It is. And on a sad note, confirming that, I have seen a Starbucks cup reusable, imitating the throwaway paper one, as if we would be stigmatized for using a reusable cup. We can buy a reusable cup that can't be distinguished from a disposable cup unless you examine it very closely.
You're right. That's crazy. That is just nuts for them to do that. You know, come up with a whole different design. Let's encourage people to be proud that they walk into a Starbucks and they're not using these resources up.
Yeah.
And what about, was I right about polystyrene?
It is, and it's both difficult to transport, or, you know, it's primarily air, so it's not economical to ship to these plants. But over the years, the plants have discovered they cannot take post-consumer styrene, like you unpack your electronic device, there's the styrofoam packing. They can't use that because it's most likely to have bits of tape sticking to it. Maybe it has set down on a driveway and picked up some of the loose stones that are there. So it is too contaminated. They mostly focus on packaging from surplus from the industry that produces the packaging. So it's sort of a sad thing that we can't recycle the styrene.
Wow. So you're saying really there's nothing to be done with it, and yet we're stuck with it. When you buy an electronic, and believe me, the electronics themselves need to be reprocessed, but that's very discouraging, Ken.
Yeah, but there are solutions. Germany, a number of years ago, passed a law that the store has to take back all your packaging and recycle it. So they've found very efficient ways of reusing packaging and still keep the product safe in transport.
All right, let's get back to a couple of things. First of all, because I don't want to run out of time here, I want to talk about your fundraising event on November 20th at the Greenhouse Loft, 2545 West Diversity Avenue in Chicago. And you can go to resourcecenterchicago.org to click for tickets and that sort of thing. What's that all about, Ken?
Well, I would almost venture that it's our coming of age or success project. We've, over 40 years, been working on recycling systems appropriate to being a more sustainable society, as well as reuse systems and urban agriculture systems. And we now know that the pilots we've developed are mature and are beneficial to move society to zero waste and can be implemented in the present economy. So Rick Bayless and Paul Verrant and a number of chefs are promoting it and will be there. And we've got four interviews with Rick Bayless online that I taped with him, and that's there's a connection on our website. So we have a capacity of 350 people, and we want to kind of celebrate that now we know what the next step our city can take, and that's the recycling we do, make sure 100% of it gets recycled and doesn't get diverted as the industrial systems often do. You mentioned some of it goes to landfill if it's too difficult to sort. We get every pound to recyclables, to industries to reuse again. And with our composting system, we keep the compost we make free of contaminants by being very selective of the in-feed product. All other composters in the city find that the resulting compost can't be used for food production because there's residues of arsenic, lead, cadmium, and other things we find in the waste stream. And then the third is our urban agriculture has a level of productivity that allows five employees per acre earning family-raising wages. So we've got recycling, composting, and urban agricultures as industries that the city could take advantage of to move towards zero waste, which is an element of sustainability. And they are viable in the present marketplace. We've got 40,000 acres that could be farms in the city. That's another 200,000 jobs. And the investment is minimal. I would call it a resilient investment, in fact. It's not that we're locking in all these acres for farming. It could be some of it will go to other industry and housing so that we don't, when the city needs to expand, don't take more farmland on the outskirts. So the programs we've evolved, recycling, composting, and urban agriculture, are industries that are expandable to provide jobs for every person in Chicago and fresh produce for every person in Chicago. So we invite people to the party to celebrate. There's something we can do, and it doesn't mean a lot of there's no sacrifice involved. Each of these things are doable with the monies we now have allocated for them and can meet our goals for the future.
What's the status of your creative reuse warehouse? I know that you're trying to bring everything together at 93rd and Drexel. Is that still on target?
We actually need more support to work that through. We acquired this 125,000 square foot building, and by the way, that's 3 acres under roof. But we have some work to do on the building before our programs can be fully operational there. So Creative Reuse will have a home there, as well as our food recovery and rerouting program, which is one of the projects I'm most excited about. There's over 600 tons a day of edible food disposed of for composting or landfill in this city, and most of it is from sea containers that arrive a day or two later than it's expected, so they don't have 5 to 10 days freshness left in them. They're written off right away and disposed of. That could be rerouted in a fast-track method to communities that just would love fresh food in that day. And we've got the distribution network already working with homeless shelters and soup kitchens that could accommodate that diversion. So we could end hunger by just not sending any edible food to landfill or composting. This is not a sacrifice in that this is food that is perfectly edible today, no blemish, except that it will not still be perfect 7 or 10 days from now. So we can up the quality of food our population eats by having a second, faster track of getting food to households.
That's mind-boggling, actually, when you think of the waste that is out there, and it's because of the system, and you're trying to work in that system and figure out how not to have that waste or to use the waste in an appropriate way.
Yeah.
And but people can do it on an individual level, too. I mean, when you talk about composting, the city of Chicago just passed a new composting law where city farms like yours and community gardens are going to be able to accept compostable materials from off-site. That's a huge change if everybody gets on board with that. I mean, obviously, I encourage folks to compost in their own backyards, but if you're part of an organization that has a community garden, that's going to be easier for you, too. So that's got to be a step in the right direction, don't you think?
Yeah, and that's where we eventually need to go. There's no truck transport needed at all. You can just go to a community garden or urban farm near your home, and maybe even lock in more connections. Compost with them, volunteer there, maybe if it's a community garden, develop a garden yourself. And this brings up another thing that I often mention. There is such a thing as agrarian virtue, and it comes from the fact that people in agriculture know that the forces they work with don't respond to anger or violence. They only respond to gentle. Imagine you're trying to get your herd to go here rather than there. getting anger and shouting just disrupts any process that might work. So the environment, the work environment for a farmer is anger and shouting don't work. Whoever heard of shouting away a hailstorm? Instead, the farmer always is thrown back on his human ability, use the mental capacity he has to find out what crops are best in what season, and just next year plan on harvesting before the hail season comes. So I think much of our industrial society does reward anger and shouting. You often get your way that way, I suspect.
Are you thinking of Donald Trump by any chance?
There are people that don't respect quality human attributes and have some other plan. I can't name all of them right now, but there is a virtue to being connected to the soil, that is your family, having time with friends and neighbors, working with the soil, and nobody there gets angry that it didn't rain. You've got solutions for all of that, and community solutions.
And you know, you're sounding like a philosopher here, Ken. That background keeps coming out there. As much as you might try to suppress it, there you are, Mr. Philosopher.
Well, philosophy is the love of wisdom, and I think the best use of wisdom is applying it to the quality of life of all people on this planet, and not only those alive now, but in future generations. So that's why I think those of us alive today have to be focused on sustainability. How do we preserve the species on the planet that all species and humans depend on? And so there's a real pleasure in having focused clearly on what our mission is, and it's simply provide a quality of life for everybody alive today and the possibility that that can be passed on to future generations.
So why don't you have a MacArthur Grant? I've read that recently, and I thought, yeah, there's the perfect guy to get one of those, and then you'd probably just pump it right back into these recycling efforts and growing stuff. But you dare to go in directions that nobody else does, Ken Dunn. And I just want to remind people that there's a big fundraising event November 20th. It's Friday. 2545 West Diversity Avenue at the Greenhouse Loft, and go to resourcecenterchicago.org to get tickets and some great chefs. And it's a way to learn about this, what you've been listening to Ken talk about here on my show. And Ken, it's always a pleasure. We will do it again soon.
Oh, thank you, Mike. And we welcome contribution, large and small. So I hope people can celebrate with us at the Greenhouse Loft. The first event is a cooking demonstration by Rick Bayless and the tasting of his product.
Anything else you want to plug about the event? Go ahead.
Well, there's silent auction items, and then a number of the best restaurants in town that buy product from City Farm will be having their dishes. So hope we see people there.
All right. Ken Dunn, thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Hi, I'm Peggy, and I have great news. Natural Awakenings, Chicagoland's only monthly magazine dedicated to healthy and green living, is now available throughout Cook and Lake Counties. We feature articles about fitness, local food and drink, gardening and environment, green energy, healthy kids and families, even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good. Live simply. Laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Welcome back to the Mike Novak Show. If you're a gardener and you haven't been to Garden Rant yet, and if you don't know what Garden Rant is, where have you been? Where have you? what moon have you been? Oh, I know. One of the moons of Pluto is where you've been hiding, because this website blog/ what do you want to call it? Whatever you want to call it has been around since about 2006. And it features some of the, I guess, snappiest writing in the biz. And I've had some of the folks on my show before. Michelle Owens has been on my program. Amy Stewart has been on my program. The two people of the original founders I've not gotten on are Susan Harris, who is on the phone with me right now. Hi, Susan.
Hi there.
And how do you pronounce Elizabeth's last name?
Licata.
At any rate, Garden Rant was started by Susan Harris and her co-conspirators, and now it has expanded to bring in other people like Alan Bush and Thomas Christopher and Evelyn Haddon and Yvette Soleil.
Soleil.
Susan, it's great to talk to you. The last time you and I saw each other in person, I believe I was serving you a mimosa.
Yes, you crashed a talk that the four of us were giving at the IGC, I think it was, and we had fun.
Yeah, in Chicago, the Independent Garden Center show. But let's get back to Garden Rant. And the reason I wanted to bring Susan on the show is because of a rant I read and then posted on my own Facebook page, which has caused a stir. And here's the thing. If you're listening to this right now, we're not going to tell you which one it was. You're going to have to figure it out for yourself. And because Susan is shell-shocked at the moment, she's still recovering I understand, because I posted it on my Facebook and I got hammered for it. Okay. And it takes me to the idea of what you guys do at Garden Rant and how dangerous that might be. So for instance, when you started Garden Rant, look at the name of it alone, Garden Rant. It means that, and you say this on your website, that you're very opinionated people, right?
Yes.
All right. Are you proud of that?
Well, I like to say that we're not afraid to say things that are sometimes politically incorrect. And I think we started the original idea for Garden Rant was to say things that you don't normally see in garden writing. So, for example, we'll criticize, a plant. We'll criticize... we'll certainly criticize the industry, and Scotts Miracle-Gro and companies like that have been a primary target of ours.
Yeah, you guys.
I would say we're proud of that.
Yeah, okay, and you have taken on Scotts Miracle-Gro a number of times.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
kind of like the evil empire in the gardening
yeah.
world. They're sort of like what Monsanto is to the food producing world, right?
Well, and they're related.
Yes.
You know, they market Monsanto products to the gardening world.
So it is an unholy alliance there. Okay.
Yes. But I would say about the word, we've debated that, whether to call it Garden Rant. And I remember I voted against it.
So, oh, really?
I don't remember what I was preferring as a term. But as it turns out, a lot of people think that it's been a good title for the blog. But I come to our defense often and say that our dirty little secret is that we rave more than we rant. And I think that's important, because I wouldn't want to go anywhere and read nothing but anger or angry criticisms all the time. We do. So I would say at least 9 times out of 10, it's a positive post.
Oh, and folks should know, by the way, that the website is gardenrant.com. Pretty easy to find. So you're proud of the fact that you actually rave more than you rant.
Well, I assure people that we're not just an angry place, because we do. I like to give boosts to, you know, like Garden Design Magazine, for example, I've raved about recently. So I really like to support things that are positive.
Yeah, and Garden Design has, that's a magazine that was in business, and then they came and listened to my show and gave me a review. And then they went out of business. And I don't know if I had anything to do with that, but then they went out of business and then came back. And they've gotten wonderful reviews.
Yes.
Everybody seems to like the reboot of that magazine.
Yes, yes. You know, and the occasional book review. And so, yeah, I think when we have kind of features about people, so it's not just ranting anymore.
this is not your mother's garden rant, right? Wait a second.
Well, it has been almost 10, you know, it's been 9.5 years. And, you know, how many times can I rant about the same, you know, Scotts Miracle-Gro? So you can't just rant.
Yes, but you came up with a new one and it went viral. This is interesting. I'm being really good to Susan here because she, as I said, she's still recovering from this latest post. And I'm not going to reveal what it is because she's got friends in the business. And then that's part of the deal, too, isn't it? That, you know, if you're going to be opinionated, people are going to come after you, aren't they?
Yes. And I find, especially if you criticize anything that seems to be from the same camp. So, you know, if I criticize Monsanto, no one's going to be too bothered by it. But if I point out errors that might come from the left, then, boy, look out, you know, and especially it seems that in the environmental world, there's a lot of criticism, a lot of differences in the detail. And so, of course, but that gets tricky. I've always been kind of a leftist activist, but I'm also a big fan of evidence-based information, so
yeah.
Sometimes they come into conflict.
Yeah, two things come out of that and pop into my head. One, let's start with, I'll get to the evidence base in a second, but the first is, as you say, part of the problem is no organization is perfect all of the time. And in the world of science and in the world of horticulture and in the world of agriculture, well-meaning companies and NGOs can do the wrong thing occasionally. And what happens is if you call them out on it, their supporters rise up and come after you and say, how can you say that about this organization or that, or they're doing such good work? And I guess your job is to say, yeah, but in this particular case, not really. And they really need to examine this. Does that seem accurate?
Yeah, I think our part of our charge that we give ourselves is to have more of a take a journalistic approach. And so, yeah, no one's really immune just because they seem to be on the right side of most issues.
Yeah, well, and that takes me to the other part of that. You said journalistic approach, and I was thinking about this after you and I communicated yesterday and how we were going to talk today, and it made me think that there are various ways you can approach a website, and that is the journalistic approach, the scientific approach, and there was a third one I had, and I can't remember what it is. Well, in the words of Rick Perry, oops.
I would say those two approaches contrast often with an ideological approach or kind of an emotional or gut reaction to things.
Okay. That's good. You know, because I wanted to bring up something where I saw your article, which is where you post, which is The Garden Professors, and they have a blog and they have a Facebook page, and I'm gonna cop to it right out of the gate here. They scare me, okay? I find that site really intimidating, and I kind of stay away from it these days because I've posted a couple of times and gotten smacked down, and I go, okay, I really don't want to be here anymore. that's part of the danger of having strong opinions. And you know, and the garden professors, their whole mantra can be summed up in the line, if it doesn't have EDU on the end of it, it stinks. And that may not, that's overstating the case. I'm being hyperbolic here on my show, but there's something to that. It's like, I want to see your facts. I want to see your peer-reviewed papers. And if you don't have them, then just go away.
Yes, they really hold everyone's feet to the fire in that regard. That's for sure, and can be very blunt.
Yeah, they can be so. And in Garden Rant, you're actually a little softer. It's you know, the approach, isn't that something? Has anybody said that to you? It's just it's a little kinder and gentler. But still, you guys are funny. That's the thing about it. And edgy, a little bit snarky from time to time.
Yes.
And I guess that was the whole purpose of it, right? Is just to put out something that wasn't there like that before.
Right, right. But like anything online, you better be prepared to be attacked. You better be prepared to defend it. So, I mean, I try really hard to not have things in my post that are inaccurate, at least. And if they prove to be, if someone proves to me or corrects me, I will make a correction. That's important. So that's another part of the journalistic approach, and I don't get into arguing with commenters, which could be so easy, and
yep.
Where would it ever end, you know?
Well,
I like the discussion. I consider the most fun to me is starting a discussion and not having to be in there actually slugging it out, because I know that other people will come to the site and do the slugging, and there'll be an interesting article, I mean, interesting conversation. And you've got to have a pretty thick skin, though. I have, in 10 years of blogging, I have deleted probably no more than 6 or 7 comments, and half the time it's because someone else is attacked. So, you know, you do have that ultimate power, not on Facebook, but on your own blog, you can delete a comment. But I would rather just let the conversation ensue.
That's interesting that you'll throw that out there and, you know, throw the stink bomb in the room and then let people duke it out.
And they do, yes.
All right. Well, as you said, I do the same thing when I'm writing pieces for my website. I research them and I try to do the best I can, but I'm only one person. And when you're cranking stuff out, you know, you don't have weeks to go researching stuff and vetting things. And sometimes you put it out there and people, usually I'm my own worst critic. I go back a week later and go, did I really say that? Or did I? Oh, wow. Look, what's that link in there? Why do I have that there? I don't know if you do the same thing. Maybe you just write stuff and then you move on.
Oh, no. But I would say one of the things I like about writing online, and I much prefer writing online to writing in print, is that you don't have to say everything yourself. You can link to other places where it's said.
So yes.
That's very helpful, and it's easier to just start the conversation and let all those other links do the speaking for you.
Right, and it's a way to say, hey, look, if you don't believe me, go to this story, all right, and read it there, and you'll be happier. Before I let you go, Susan Harris from Garden yes. Rant at gardenrant.com. See, this is the radio thing. You gotta give the plug so people know where they're going.
Right.
And by the way, the link to Garden Rant will be on my website, mikenovak.net. One of your passions is lawns and the lawn reform movement. Can you talk about that just a little bit? Actually, that is something several years ago I thought, oh, I've got to get Susan on the show to talk about this, and I haven't done that because I've had a slogan for a long time about lawns, which is when in doubt, rip it out. And I get a feeling that you're somewhere along that continuum.
Oh, yes. So I brought together a bunch of other kind of garden communicators, let's say, I think 6 years ago, to just pool our resources so that online people could find information about lawns. But we, as opposed to taking a completely lawn-hating stance, we call it lawn reform. And we had three different focus areas. So ripping it out and replacing it with something else was one, but or using better species of turf grass
Right.
Was another, or just taking care of it in a more environmentally responsible way. I personally ripped out my lawn, and I had a pretty big one at the time. And I would say the biggest lesson that I learned in that is that if you've got a few feet, some acreage, or even a fraction of an acre to cover, and you're trying to do it without a lawn, you had better find some pretty damn good ground covers, because when you try to go without lawn, I quickly discovered why lawn is so popular, because it's it's cheap and you can pay any teenager to mow it. So, but if you replace your lawn with an actual garden with a mix of kinds of plants, you have to know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say my passion now is, if people ask me what my favorite plants are, and I say, well, this is going to sound really boring, but it's ground covers.
Ah.
Yeah.
But you're right. They're a lot harder to manage than a lawn. And I'm with you, actually, despite my slogan, my whole philosophy on that is just do it without a lot of nasty inputs like synthetic chemicals, and especially weed and feed, which is the bane of my existence, because people just spread it all over the place and they don't know what they're doing. And it's not necessary. And that's the other thing. That's the one thing I rant about in the garden world. So much of what's sold us is not necessary. It's you just don't need it. And all product after product after product. And it gives gardening a bad name, if you ask me, because the newest and the latest and the greatest, not necessary most of the time, is what I find.
Right. And you walk into one of the Home Depot, and in the gardening section, and what you see is pesticides.
That's the top of the list. Is that okay? Let me put it that way. Most of you out there don't know what you're using. You're not going to bother to learn about what you're using. You're not going to read the label directions. You're not going to do it properly, and you didn't need it in the first place. And so, why would I coddle those people, and why would I encourage the industry to sell those people? So when I go to a garden talk or something, or on my show here, and folks say, well, should I spray? And I say, no, because you're not going to do it right. And that's really a blanket statement, and the garden professors would be horrified. but, my feeling is I know human nature. Okay, yeah. I've seen gardeners. I talk to gardeners. I know what they're going to do, and they're going to do it wrong. And that's unfortunate, but it's the way of the world. All right, Susan Harris, thank you so much. This turned out to be longer than I thought. I'll be doing some editing. Maybe I will get my act together and send you a rant so that people can yell at me for a while.
That would be great. We'd love that.
And take the pressure off of you guys to go, see?
Yeah.
Susan, thank you so much. Glad you were sitting in your car talking to me. I hope the police don't ask you what you're doing there.
No, I'm in a very classy neighborhood here in D.C., so I'm in good shape.
All right, great. Thanks again.
Great talking to you.
You can find more information about the Mike Novak Show at mikenovak.net. That's MikeNowak.net. For links, photos, and commentary.